we are living in an artificially induced state of consciousness that resembles sleep. The poor and the underclass are growing. Racial justice and human rights are non-existent. We have been lulled into a trance. They have made us indifferent to ourselves, to others. We are focused only on our own gain. That is their primary method of survival. Keep us asleep. Keep us selfish. Keep us sedated.
You're listening to Toward Anarchy on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Here's your host, Michael Storm.
Anarchy. Thank you so much for joining me. I am your host, Michael Storm, and as always, it is terrific. It is my pleasure to be here with you, share this time together, have you listen to me rant and ramble on. Any one of these things is possible, but it is truly my pleasure to do so, and I appreciate you taking the time. There's plenty to talk about today, and I'm going to focus on specifically data centers. It's one of these things that keeps coming up. It is a huge topic of social and political concern right now, and there's a lot of noise, as I am prone to saying and prone to dealing with. Getting out of the way, removing, clearing up for people. We'll get the noise out of the way. We'll figure out what the words are, what the numbers are. We'll figure out what all the context is, and we will do that momentarily. I just want you to do me a favor, wherever you're finding me at today, click that like button and that share button, whatever you have to do. Tap it, smash it, build it its own data center, program it with a bunch of stolen data, and call it AI when it's nothing more than, it's no better than that sort of word-filling in thing that your phone does. Whatever it is, to get that thing to pay attention and notice and let me know that you're out there and that you appreciate what we're talking about. And, of course, you can subscribe and follow along. It's basically at Toward Anarchy, wherever it is. Facebook, Instagram, X, YouTube, Rumble, wherever you're finding me at, it is at Toward Anarchy, or it's very likely probably not me. And speaking of Toward Anarchy, towardanarchy.com is the place to follow along anytime, regardless of the social media or the conditions or whether they're sort of blocking out the posts and you're not seeing the post and you're getting that shadow ban feeling, whatever it happens to be. I don't have that problem because I have my own space carved out on the internet. It's called Toward Anarchy at towardanarchy.com, and you can find me there all the time. I'm there all the time. I'm always adding something new, and there's always every individual show. The episodes are up there in MP3. You can listen to them if they're not on the RSS feed on Spotify or something like that. All the other ears are available. All the other episodes, all the conversations, they're all there at towardanarchy.com, and you can check those out. So, obviously everybody is talking about data centers. They're a thing. It's just everywhere. It pops up no matter what. News articles, conversations, AI driving it, or the push to move AI into a bigger and broader future is the push behind, or seemingly the impetus behind, needing these so-called data centers. And so I guess we have to figure out what data centers are, like I do with all of these questions, these topics that I put to an anarchist audit, as it were. We look at the basic questions and just sort of try to do the homework, right, and figure out exactly what it is based on what information we have. That's all I've ever done in my life. I've always questioned the narrative, and that's what we're going to do today about data centers. We're going to question the narrative, and we're not going to question it from any particular position. While I support technology, I also support our environment. I support our reality, and I believe that people should come first and that these other things can be secondary. But I also believe that if you have the money to do the things that you can do, and you can do them legitimately, there really shouldn't be much to stop you from doing what you want to do when you're not harming other people and you're not damaging other people's property, and people are able to participate in what you do with you voluntarily. That's it. That's always the crux of every position that I take when it comes to these questions of can or somebody should do something. Well, we're beyond that point. If I'm asking the question already, I mean, somebody's already doing it. Somebody has already thought about it. That Pandora's box is already open by the time that you and I are talking about it. So it's not a matter of can or should, or should somebody regulate this, that, or the other thing. It's what are you and I going to do about it? What difference does it make in our lives that is going to change us and the way that we approach things, or the way that we believe that something should be in the world? And that's what matters. And so, taken in that context, let's find out what data centers are. Let's ask some of the basic questions, and we'll just start at the beginning of it and find out what is a data center. Well, they are those storage facilities that everybody is talking about. Well, there's storage facilities, but they're also processing centers. And it's not just where information is stored. It's where information is accessed. It's where it's processed. It's where it's learned in some cases. It's where it's created in other cases. It's certainly where it's disseminated. So there are these storage facilities, but they're also for processing information. And within them are servers and networking equipment and routers and switches and power supplies. And it all depends on what type of data center you have. There are different types of data centers, and they serve different purposes, although generally the same purpose, which is, you know, a location full of a bunch of computers, and the data on them is being exchanged and processed, as we say. So there's different types. There are enterprise data centers, and an enterprise data center would be a corporate data center. It would be a data center that a company had built for themselves for their specific purpose, generally speaking, or they built it themselves. Most companies are not into building technology. They pay somebody else to do it. That's why there are various companies all over America and around the world that's what they do, is they build data centers, and they'll build them for corporate businesses, and it's to house their information and to process their information and to house any things that they're developing, if it's AI or something like that, if they are a technology company and they're developing something. But it also serves their customers. My website is housed somewhere in a data center. I don't even necessarily know where. That's a whole other conversation, because absolutely I can take my website and I can put it on my phone and host it on my phone. I could do all that, and it would be forever accessible, and they couldn't even take me offline because I have a website that's addressable on the blockchain. And so there's nothing you can do about that. It exists. And as long as people have that blockchain address, they can get to my website. That's on the deeper end of things. But generally speaking, my website is hosted just like everybody else's website. It's hosted on an Amazon server, or it's hosted on a GoDaddy server or whatever. And these would be big buildings full of servers and equipment to process this information, to store the websites, to build the websites with, all the networking equipment that connects all the various computers together that make it so that you can do that, and so that you can share your website with other people. And that's a enterprise level that, you know, GoDaddy, that's an enterprise level. They have a corporation, and they have these data centers, and I and many, many other people all around the world purchase space and all the other things that come with it. It's actually quite a long list. You think of it just in terms of space if you don't know anything about it, but there's processing, and there's connections, and there's RAM, and there's database connections, and there are all these other things that come along with it. And so all these things are housed on these enterprise servers for these big corporations. And then there's hyperscale ones. Those are the larger ones. And I suppose my website and places like that, you know, sort of Amazon Web Services or Microsoft or whatever, those may be some of the larger ones, some of the cloud computing and web hosting. These are the types of things that are going to be on those as well. They're all the same thing. It's just about the scale of them and whether they're offered to. That's the thing about a lot of what we're talking about in terms of the data centers. It's us. We're the ones that are using the data, not necessarily the corporations. Now, there's a lot of talk about these corporations creating these data centers so that they can steal people's data and program these computers, and that they need all this power to program these computers, and that it's not really true. It's all really sort of a manipulation of what really happens with these machines and what they really want these data centers for. And that's why we're looking at the data centers, because I believe that if there's any reason for a particular push, that we can pinpoint it by looking at, well, following the usual trails, right? Let's look at the language. Let's look at the numbers, the percentages, and then let's look at the numbers in terms of dollars and who's behind it, and follow the money and follow the votes and follow the politics and all the other things that lead to the other people who are doing these things. There are a couple other different types of these data centers. There's edge centers, and these would be sort of booster. It's like the Wi-Fi signal booster in your house. If your Wi-Fi comes in at one end of the house and you notice that you don't get as good a connection at the other end of the house, you get one of these little modules or plug in somewhere along the way, and it boosts the signal, and it just enhances the signal to get it that much further to you on the other end of the house. Not that everybody should, that should even be a problem with most normal people, but realize that that's a thing, and that's kind, and that it's basically the same concept, is that there's all of these places that have a high concentration of available data centers, the information that's coming from them, the power transmission lines, all of this, and then there are other places that don't. And so you set up smaller until you develop a larger data center, you set up these smaller ones, and there's even micro, tiny, sort of tiny ones that are meant to be modular or mobile, and those are the kinds of things that you would use for quick deployment. A disaster scenario, something happens and the power's out and computer communications are out, lines are down, this sort of thing. You have these quick mobile deployment centers that can connect people, that can get people connected, that can get people data and get them back to, you know, at least a level with everybody else in terms of being able to communicate like everybody else does and have access to information and everybody. So it's not all doom and gloom. Right away, you see, if you're listening to what's being told here, that these things are important, that they're used, that we use them, and that they have different purposes, and it's not just about this AI push, and it's not all about that. So, all right, so we know what data centers are. Let's look at where they are, because this is kind of key. And I wanted to do it closer to the front of what we're talking about than the backside of it, because it's so key. Where are the data centers? Ask that question. You can type it into one of these search engines, and it's going to pop up and it's tell you. Trust me, all this information is out there. There's a ton of information out there. I had to weed it down and sort of pick through and try to get it to fit into the conversational space that we have, and to make sure that you get the important information from it. So there's an abundance of information is what I'm getting at. It's all out there if you want to know it. The data centers are everywhere. They have been for years and years. This is one of the things that's it's very frustrating about this conversation and about the idea that everybody's all upset now. And it's like data centers just popped up overnight and they're just everywhere. That's not the case at all. Let's just take America. They're everywhere. They're everywhere in the world. They're all over the place. Let's just take America and look at what's happening here. There are just over 1,100 data centers in America in one form or another. More than 700 of them are already operational. They've been in use, are in use, being used, not in any building stage, maybe growing, whatever, developing, but they are in use and have been in use. 700 of less, well, of just over of 1,100. And trust me, these numbers are fluid, and by the time you hear this, depending on exactly when you hear this, the number could go up or down, who knows. It's not the point. The bigger point is that it's being couched as if data centers have just appeared, that they're a new thing that we're trying to deal with, and that we have to figure out some way to work our way around this because they're everywhere, and they're just going to keep coming, and they're just going to take over, and they're going to ruin the water supply and the air and run up the electricity bills, and we'll get into all of that. So there's over 1,100 of them here already in America. More than 700 of those are operational, less than 300 of them being built then, and there are less than 100 that are planned. So that's out of that total of just over 1,100. Most of those are in Virginia and Texas, and by a long shot, as in by like double. You look at Virginia, look at Texas, and then you look at the next state, and it's like half what are there. It's upwards of 100. I don't remember. There's so many numbers. There's 50 states. That's not the important, is how many of them are here, and there. If you want to find those bits of information, what they're planning, what's going on in your neck of the woods, it's easy to do. Just type that data centers in your state, and it'll tell you everything you want to know and more. But so the point of that, right, you catch the point of this. You ask where the data centers are. They're everywhere, and they already have been. You may not even know that there was one right next door to you necessarily. You know, maybe it's not literally right next door to you, but you know what I mean. So of 1,100 of them, 700 plus of them are already operational. So exactly what is the hype if there's less than half of that number in planning or being built and already being built, and a small number of that, you know, only a small percentage of those ultimately that are being planned that aren't in. So that's it. That's what's happening. That's the near-term future. And so much of this is on speculation. So much of this is based on speculation. Yes, these may be built, this 300 plus the 100-ish or so that are in planning stages, not in actual building stages, then that's it. Though that's the assumption, that's the math, that's a guesswork. We'll get into all of this, exactly what these numbers are assumed to be. That's part of the problem, is they don't really know. There's a serious assumption, and we can give you a couple of examples about how these things will drop off, and I will get to those as well, because there's a couple of really great examples in particular with things that some of you will understand and then other things that almost all of you will understand. So we'll get there. The data centers are everywhere. There's already a whole bunch of them, and there's not necessarily that many more being built. If you look, particularly if you look at the idea that technology grows and how quickly technology grows, and if you remember, was it Moore's Law, right? That's the guy who said that technology doubles every 6 months or something like that. Well, it may have slowed down to that, since that claim was made, but you can generally look at the growth of the use of technology, whether the technology itself really doubles in that period of time, the growth of the use of the technology grows, and that continues to push the larger need for more computing power and more storage space. But if you haven't noticed, and this is one of the things that I was getting about, but what you would notice if you stop to think about it, is how much computing power is in your phone, what your phone already does, how much computing power already is in your computer and what it can do by itself. In fact, they are releasing now computers that are AI computers, and that they can do do all of the AI stuff right on themselves, and they don't require any more power per se to run than your already existing computers. It's in the operation of the computer itself. It's built into the thing, and so it uses the technology well, and they work even when they're not connected to the internet. So we'll talk a little bit more about that as we go through it. What about who owns the data centers, just to make a point of it? Microsoft, Amazon, Google, Meta, you know, Facebook. Those are some of the big corporate ones. You know, obviously those other names out there, you know that they have them, HP and IBM or Lenovo, places. They probably have some, if not many, data centers, because there's going to fall a lot of those will fall into corporate. They're not necessarily being used on the hyperscale like maybe a cloud computing one, Amazon or Google, something like that would be. Certainly not Meta or Facebook, because those are a place where we all go to that digital space and access it. So it definitely falls into hyperscale when you're talking about millions of users accessing it all day, all night, every single day, all around the world. You understand what's going on, what's already been going on. Remember, I said a long time ago, I pointed out when they first started talking about the amount of data that's being crunched and how much energy it takes, I said, wait until these same people hear about how much energy, how much time, how much effort, how much money, electricity, data centers, what have you, goes into video games and pornography, the things that dominate the use of the internet other than just general information exchange. So, it's a joke, but it's not, because it's very serious. Those numbers of where the data centers are at and how many exist already tell that story. There's already a bunch of data being used, and we'll get to the percentage of how much of that is of our actual sort of electricity usage, our terawatt hour usage. That's the next thing I'm going to talk about, because that's one of the next questions, is the water bill, the electricity bill. How's it going to affect local rates and costs? Is it going to put a strain on the electricity delivering network that we have in our little town when they build the data center outside of town there? It's a good question. It's a reasonable question. Of course it is. Of course, nobody else asks it about any of the myriad of other things that are being built, generally speaking. That is to say, the sort of average person that has something to say and lacks a certain amount of information about what is happening with these data centers. Hopefully you're not one of these people, and hopefully after this you will have a better understanding. I don't know, we're all going to have to come to it at the same time here within the next 36 minutes or so, because that's about how much time we have left across the network to get the ideas across and to question them. I'm not even setting up a space for you to take you to a particular place of understanding. I'm throwing the data out here. I'm putting it in perspective, and we'll go from there. We'll figure it out from there. Each of us can decide, but it won't be an opinion. It's no longer your opinion about the data centers. It'll be a sort of statistically data-based, factual bit of understanding that you have about data centers, and then so your choice about whether or not they're a good or a bad thing is based on facts and not your opinion about how bad it could be or about how bad AI might be or whether or not AI is real or alive. We'll have to get into some of that here too, because it definitely all plays together. So the bills in the area, when they come and they build up and they start sucking off the that's a terrible phrase, isn't it? The electricity and the supposedly the water supply and all these different things that are taken into consideration when this gigantic business comes and builds up in your neighborhood. So what do we already consume then? It's about 180 terawatt hours. That's up. It's about three times what it was a decade ago, a little over a decade ago, upwards of 15 years ago, somewhere around there. So it's tripled in 15 years. And again, we're talking about technology and we're talking about technology use. There's no, well, we'll talk about maybe how more of it is, how more of the usage of it could be perhaps being used by one group more than another, than just you and I, just the normal people. Obviously, the normal people is going to make up some large percentage of it, just us using it. And I mean, in businesses, as opposed to, say, necessarily a political or social interest in these things. So there's a big difference, and there's a big point that all, again, it all fits and it all comes together here. So we've been consuming about 180 terawatt hours, and that's gone up, as you would expect. But how much of that is the total of our electricity usage in America? Any guesses? Any at all? Is it 10%? Is it 20%? 30%? You think it's 50%? You think it's really high? What if I told you it's less than 5%? That 180 terawatt hours that we currently use with the 700 plus operational data centers is less than 5% of the total electricity. That's according to the Department of Energy. And mind you, all these numbers come from someplace else. None of these numbers are mine. I didn't make up any of these numbers. I pulled them out of not my backside, out of factual information collected by other people that presumably are on the ground that have done the work and presumably can be trusted to put this information out. You've got to set aside the desire to dismiss information immediately until you hear the entire picture, until it's all put together for you, and then you can go back through and you can decide, oh, well, how does this bit of information, how do these numbers, how does this percentage here compare with what's over here? Does it look like this matches up? Does seem to match up. And that's what I found as I looked at the numbers, that I didn't see any particular reason why these numbers would be wrong, other than the sort of methodology of guessing what's coming next. Not what we're already using. That should be pretty obvious, and it should be pretty auditable in a general sense, and really a very specific sense, because there are laws that guide it and things that force it to happen and make it so that there is some information out there that's collected, and you just have to say, all right, we're looking at the numbers. We'll worry about all this other stuff later, because it should all add up in the end. If it doesn't, then you can go back and look at, well, why doesn't that add up in the end? Those numbers must be wrong. Somebody's playing with those numbers. Until you get to the end, until you do all the math, you don't know if you can do that or not. So there's no point in guessing at this point. Less than 5%. It's like 4.4% something at this point. And so everything else after that is the guess. That's what I'm talking about. It's the guess. It's the future. They don't really know. That's up 12. They're saying it's going to be up to 12% of our, you know, more than double, even though they're not more than doubling the number of data centers that are out there, and newer data centers should be more power efficient. That's the way technology works. It's just the way things go. As you move forward, it's better. The older ones, they technology out. They lose their spark because they don't process as quickly or as efficiently, and so new things are built. And so some of these new ones will presumably replace other ones, and those other ones will go out of operation, and they'll be replaced with something else. So it's a process. It's not a static thing. It didn't just happen yesterday. It's been happening for decades. It's been building, and it will continue to build up, and we will continue to grow as a population, and we continue to grow in their need for our use to process, need of energy to process data. So they're guessing that it could be up to 12% by 2028. A lot of the load concerns, that's what we're talking about, the load on the networks and the costs and things, these are coming from electricity providers. And unless you haven't figured this out yet, maybe it's not the same, because it's not the same in every place. But in most places across America, what we're talking about when we talk about electricity providers, we're talking about monopoly system. It's not a free market system, generally speaking. There are some. There are co-ops or things like that. But generally speaking, even the ones that are called co-ops aren't necessarily co-ops. And they're run by oftentimes these petty little dictators in every little town and city. There's boards and it's always just questionable any time you limit the market for producing something. And then the peoples that the market has been limited for to buy all of the above come along and say, we need more, or we need to protect our industry, or if we don't watch out, these guys are going to come along and they're going to force you, this is the gaslighting part, where they say they're going to force you to pay more, which is always true in a market where we're consuming things, right? So if the AI centers, the Microsofts, the Amazons, all these guys that go out and they build more data centers and they push more data, they're going to charge us for it. They charge us for the web hosting services. They charge us for the data storage, for the processing of information through AI, all of these things. So there's money there. There's costs. It's going to be passed through, but does it pass through to everybody? Yes, when you start talking about things like our electricity system, because it is a socialized thing, it is a monopolized system, it is not a free market system. And so what you end up seeing is something that's really very transparent. It's that these people want more money. These people want more money, and they want to charge more money for it, because one of the things is because it's all managed by committee instead of markets and demand. They don't make as much money as they could or want to or don't think they do, or that money is diverted to other things, that there's taxes and it's a certain tax and percentage has to go to this and maintaining this and not – it can't be used for this with inside the company or to pay people or what have you, that there's always some dictate about how things are done instead of the market managing things like it tends to do. So you have all these petty little dictators in all these little towns and all these little electric co-ops all over America, and they're, you know, sort of potentially overestimating the demand by 50%. That's the sort of assumed number. If you would go and look, I think 48% was the number that somebody somewhere came up with. But I don't think you need to know that particular percentage to know that people with invested interest in making more money who produce electricity would have something to say about this that favors them doing this. Right? We talked about following the money. So these usage assessments are going to come with a tax. They'll come with a cost. And yeah, when the companies and the corporations get taxed, they pass that in, they pass that cost on to us. So if they can bump up the cost and the fees to these companies, then they're going to pay more. Yes, presumably it helps take the strain off. Certainly shouldn't be raising our costs, our individual costs, as citizens of any particular town or city, because they're paying for their own electricity. Of course, we're paying them for the services that they use the electricity for, so the costs come to us. So if you have some petty little dictators over there misestimating the costs and things that are going to have to be involved in this because they stand to profit, you immediately need to look at their motive behind it. So they're talking tariffs. They're talking, you know, that, yeah, they're even calling it tariffs in some places. And they're setting up a separate rate class for the, it just depends on what state you're in. There are different states that are working on different legislation. Obviously, presumably a place like Virginia or Texas where where they already have a larger number of these operational facilities, these data centers, that they already have a number of things already in place for them. And so that's the electricity cost. It's a minimal amount of our overall usage, and we don't know how much is going to be needed in the future. And let me give you a perfect example of this. Just because I'm going to get to these no matter what, so it may as well just be now, because there are the computer usage spikes and then it drops off with new technologies and interests. And what we're going through right now is a spike. It's driven by corporate profits and the idea that AI is going to be this next, and it is. It is the next big thing in computing. But what was the last next big thing in computing? Anybody remember? Raise your hand if you, no, I'm just kidding. I couldn't even see if you were raising your hand. The point is that we all know what it was, right? It was Bitcoin and NFTs and digital money. And while a bunch of people made money off of it, a whole bunch of other people lost a whole bunch of money in speculation and not understanding a new and developing market. And what happened to most of it? It fell completely off. A whole bunch of people lost a whole bunch of money. And now it's almost a nothing thing. There's Bitcoin. There's a couple of these others out there, Ethereum, maybe a few others that are still sort of popular and get information, they get headlines and people talk about them, and the value of them is significant if you get in at the right time, and it grows if you get in at the right time. But the fact is that they have no real use in the real world. And so once that use was realized, that lack of a use was realized in the real world, that technology fell by its side. Not only that, it became easier to use, easier to do, easier to participate in as it spreads, just like everything does with technology as it spreads out. And so what I was talking about with your computer or your phone, so your phone has, and your computer, if you go under your browser and you start typing something or almost anything on your computer these days, it doesn't matter, any Word document, any basic text document, if you're typing on your computer and you have a normal computer like everybody else does, it's not super special and you haven't gone and changed the settings or something like that, your computer has a large language model built into it, and it has for a long time, particularly if you attach something like Word to your computer, because then it expands. Because you, as you're typing on your phone, you see it. It's been a thing for a long time where it fills in the word for you. You type it on your computer, it starts to fill in the word for you, and it even starts to guess what the next word you're going to use is. You start pressing the space button on your phone, and you can actually do that. There's a fun little game you can play. You can type in a certain word, and you can see what how your thoughts sort of affect the AI as this large language model. What they're calling AI today are just these large language models, and they're on your phone. They're already hosted on your phone. You see how smart relatively smart they are in guessing. You can type in a word like police. This would be a good one for me, and press the space, and as you press the space, it offers more and different words for you to choose from that would follow up: police state, police suck, F the police, whatever it happens to be associated with me that's going to pop up. And you can see how your little personal AI on your phone, that large language model that exists on your phone and on your computer and doesn't require an entire data center to run. It doesn't require all this much more power. Because, let me give you another example. The phone one is one that everybody understands because they see that, and it's perfect for talking about AI and what large language models are. You see that they're not very smart. That thing that's on your phone that guesses those words, that's a language model. That's a I don't know if you want to call it large language. It's certainly a hell of a lot larger than it was even just a few years ago. But they've been that way for a long time, where they've been able to guess and understand. And so and the programming that they talk about programming AI with is programming more and growing logical responses based on larger subsets of data that is available in the world. As you specialize, you go from general knowledge and information and the ability to just communicate, which is what we taught at first. Again, I help teach the stuff. I help teach it that what words are. And to ignore repeated phrases when I say and like that, something along those lines, and to cut that out, to ignore that, to for AI to understand that that's not a real word and that there's not valuable information in there. That's one of the things that I taught it. When they talk about teaching these things, it's all that's what they're talking about. They're talking about expanding the automated response, and that comes with specialized knowledge. And you have to introduce. This is why everybody says that AI is stealing, or that the people are creating the AI are stealing stuff, is because then you once you get past general knowledge and general understanding, obviously specific knowledge is the next thing. That's why it works so well for these models right now to produce code for developing things and for it to search through numbers and problems that we as humans can't have to write out and don't have the space for in our brains or in our world to deal with all of the hypothetical and theoretical zeros and pages of numbers required to solve complex ever-widening math problems and games with numbers that we use to manipulate and try to understand our world. All these things are very ubiquitous, and they have been for a long time. They're just making them bigger and more able to produce specialized information results. And then when you mix those two things together, you get the same thing that happens with people, is that people will have a conversation and they'll confuse an idea or something that they're talking about, something that they remember. They don't remember the conversation that well. They don't remember the piece of information because they only had some of it or they only got a brief part of it. This is where the AI acts just like humans do. You get into a conversation every once in a while, you lose your place. You don't remember what it is. You don't have the answer. You don't know what it is. And this is what happens when we get these sort of delusions and things that they talk about with the AI and all these computers. And that's why they're building these data centers, supposedly, right? Because they need to do all this programming and learning and processing of information for these AIs. But I'm telling you, it's really already been done. I told you a long time ago, this has got to be 2 years now. It must be 2 years, if not more, when I told you about me using LLMs on my computer and installing different LLMs on my computer. There's thousands of them, maybe more than that. There are so many of them out there, and you can run them locally on your computer. You can run them on your phone. You can run them disconnected from the internet. They're not processing more information. They don't require a data center. So there's a lot. There's a lot wrapped up in there with the AI, and we'll see if we can suss some more of it out here and just hit on a few more of the important points as I saw it, as I'm going through and looking at these things. What about the water? They keep talking about the water. It's the electricity and the water and the environment, and this is of course just to bring up fear. This is what all of this is about. It's all about fear and the fact that people don't understand and they don't know. And so of course that's what I'm trying to help eliminate here, is that lack of understanding. I'm trying to remove that fear-based understanding or lack of understanding of a thing and give you full understanding of it or a better understanding of it to move forward and make better decisions. That's all I ever do from 1 week to the next. And it's really easy with stuff like this because it's right there in the numbers. Once you start hearing those numbers that we've already talked about, you already realize that there's a lot of hype, that there's a lot of noise. If you didn't already realize that already, if you're one of the people who's on the fence about AI, you're hearing all the chatter, all the noise is coming from every direction, and you don't know what to believe. But then you start to hear numbers, and you start to hear real facts about what these data centers are and why they're used and who uses them. It starts to paint a different picture, a very interesting picture. In fact, it's the kind of thing that it's just a quick a rephrasing of something or looking at it from a different angle and it telling a completely different truth. Or maybe not a completely different one, but certainly more of a truth than you've been left with. The water thing, it's kind of bogus. Almost every one of them are air-cooled or an otherwise closed-loop design, which ultimately is still either air-cooled or if it's water-cooled, it's one-time use of the water, and it's never out of the system. It's reprocessed and recooled, that same, just like it would be in your car with a radiator. And so occasionally, yeah, you end up having to put some more fluid in there. But basically, it's if you burn up the car, you get it really hot. If you do something wrong with the thing, if you damage it, that's when that comes into play. It's the same with the computers and the technology. They don't use the water. It's really a misnomer. It may have been a big thing. There may have been some big pushes for it. The reality is that water is such a controlled thing. It's controlled by the states and by the federal government, and it's very, very tough to justify the use of water for something like that. I can just imagine the horrible paperwork and the nightmare that it would be trying to do something like that, and trying to set up something like that where you're using water. We've been through the years where the industry gets to destroy our water supply. We're past that now, and we just don't tend to let it happen. And I don't think it's happened here. I think it's just a lot of hype. So that's where I'll leave the water thing. I already talked about the AI and the sort of fact that it's a misnomer, and about how these large language models, what they call AI, they're just big search engines, and they just guess. They just guess at what it is that you're going to say based on very logical reason. You know, we do that too. You find yourself knowing what's going to be the next word out of somebody's mouth based on the things that they just said, right? And there are a lot of people who will finish other people's sentences and say the things for them, and it becomes an annoying thing. Say, just shut up and let me finish what I'm saying. Maybe you do, maybe you don't know what I mean. Just let me finish saying what I'm saying, and stop trying to guess. You don't need to guess at it. You know, let me tell you, because that's what I'm going to do. The AI, the machine, it's just guessing, and you're trying to narrow down its guesses and its specialized information. That's what we're doing with AI at this point. Now, we've already been through the conversation about theft, so I'm not really going to go into that anymore. It's learning. It's like we learn. It learns in a lot of ways like we learn. Is it theft if you look at the Mona Lisa and then go home and paint one for yourself, even if it turns out to be almost exactly and almost indistinguishable from the one that it came from? No, obviously that's not theft. Clearly the Mona Lisa is still right there. It's that whole digital conversation. You can't steal something from somebody if they still have it. Now, can you misuse what you've taken from somebody? Potentially, but it's a longer, broader conversation. And obviously, there must be some legal area where they understand that I'm right, that the law agrees with me, that common law agrees with me. Otherwise, there'd be a hell of a lot more lawsuits and a hell of a lot less settled. You know what the movie theater, the big movie guys did when AI came around and started making movies? They signed up for deals to let the AI people use their stuff to train on so that they could get a cut out of it. You're not going to stop it from moving forward, but you can get in for the ride, and you can limit the damage to yourself by making your product, your IP, available to other people through their products. That's what happens with everything. That's what licensing is in business. When you license a property to somebody, it's to keep them from stealing it or from knocking you off. And so what did the movies do? What did the movies movie. They watched what happened to MP3s and the music industry and what that has happened to that over the past 25, 30 years. And they realized that we're not going to fight technology. We better get on board with it, and we better figure out how to utilize it to our best benefit. And that's the thing about it, that a lot of what is being pushed off as what is given to us as bad information is being purposely put out there in terms of gatekeeping. I talk about it all the time. It happened here not too long ago with one of the big teachers' unions, where they come out and they talk about AI specifically, and they're saying, well, we have to take the technology out of their hands. We have to take AI out of the hands of the children. We can't have these things in school. Why? Because they can teach better than most teachers, because the information is right there. It's instantaneous. You don't have to sit through a boring classroom. You don't have to sit through a terrible teacher, a bad educator, a bad education system, an education system that doesn't care about the individual's wants and needs when it comes to their education. All of these things are bypassed by technology and have been for decades now. It's almost funny that anybody even bothers with formalized education anymore, but it's because of the gatekeeping, the political and social gatekeeping, trying to protect these jobs in these industries. There's a lot of that going on all in and around technology and learning all of the time, and the things that technology touches on. If it touches on art, if it touches on education, if it touches on any of these things where somebody else is, there's going to be some subset of that group that says, no, this is a bad thing, instead of recognizing it for what it is. It's a tool that everybody can utilize and that nobody's being stolen from, because you don't hold a monopoly on ideas. You don't hold a monopoly on art. You hold a monopoly on your art that you created, that you hold in your hands. Everything that you release to everybody else, it's not yours anymore, no matter how much you want it to be. The second you show it to somebody else and let them take away the digital file or see the art and take away the image of it, and it's their feelings, it's theirs, it belongs to them, it's not yours anymore. Let it go. Go on making your art, being the creative person that you are, and utilize the tools to your best advantage, and do it better than the machine. That's all. Art has always, those things that they're complaining about that these machines can do, these have always been very specialized places, whether it's the art or the law or making music or making movies, whatever it is that these AI things have touched on. There's a lot of people that have spent a whole bunch of money learning the nonsense that they learned, going through the public education system, going through the university system, spending all sorts of money, being charged way more than they would if they were just able to turn on a computer and sit down and learn and do these things themselves. So they have a lot of vested interest in somebody being able to just sit down, turn on a computer, and do exactly what they do. But it's never been any different. Art was always, these creative things, these things were always in the eye of the beholder. And the fact that there's so many artists and so many creatives are bandwagoning the hate on AI just shows the ignorance, the stupidity, the fear, all of the things that you think exist with people who are insecure about what it is they do, because what it is that they do has limited value in reality. Art and these things have this fantastic place in reality of value in terms of how we as individuals receive them. How you as an individual creates them and what they actually are produced on it means absolutely nothing to the world. Nothing. It's not unless and until somebody absorbs and consumes that art and puts their value behind it that it has any value at all to anyone but yourself. Get over yourself and talk about facts and talk about information, not your fears and not why you don't prefer a thing or think that a thing is going to be bad. So all these things that they've talked about, they're all really easily sort of dismissible or disprovable in terms of the fear generated around them, mostly because of guesses. But why? Who's behind it? What do we need? Do we need to understand more? Do we need to have more data centers? Do you and I need to have more data centers? Do corporations need to have more data centers? Not necessarily. Not based on what we're seeing here in these numbers and how technology falls in and out of use and how one of the examples I was going to give, one of the more obvious ones I started to give it and then I stopped, is video and music production. That's something that used to require specialized entire buildings. You would go into a building and it would have different rooms for each of the different instruments and all of this specialized recording equipment and blah, 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 blah. And now what? I can do all of that and I've been able to do it for decades right here on this cheap little $100 laptop I bought. That's technology. That's hype and fear driving the idea that you are going to have to pay for AI, that AI is coming for you, that the data centers are out to get you. Well, maybe they are, because what else are they for? What about government support and push for data centers? But this time last year, Donald Trump signed an executive order to remove all the barriers and sort of help in the assistance and in development and streamlining of things like an environmental impact review, stuff like that, you know, sort of laws and paperwork that people have to work around to be able to build these qualified projects like data centers. And qualified projects is quotes, because these are projects that are otherwise selected by politics, politicians, people in the political realm, the Secretary of Defense, the Secretary of Commerce, and the Secretary of Energy and Interior, and all these guys that have all this vested interest in them. Let me tell you, 90% of the federal government is using AI at this point, with a 9x growth in AI use by government in just this short period of time that we're talking about, far more than that double or triple over 15 years. It's more double or triple in a couple of years that government is using this information. What about flock cameras? What about the data that is being collected by those? Where does that need to be stored? Where is all that information? Because that information is just information that's being collected and processed by government in an effort to make criminals, to create criminals, to find places where they can steal money from more people, lock more people in cages, follow them, track them, tax them, and rob them at every single turn. More than half of all federal and state agencies are using AI now, with more than half of those, like 60% of them, saying that they use it daily, and that number is growing. And that's far more than the rest of us out here, maybe in a business application. So let's look at that. So if all of this data usage is out there, we got just 2 minutes left. If all of this data is out there and all this data needs to be transferred and used, who's using it? Well, you and I are using a lot of it, but if government is basically half of everything that's generated, whether it's, you know, businesses being supported or people being supported by government contracts or direct handouts or something, if we're up in and around or over, as the case may be, that 50% mark, then that means 50%, at least 50% of all of this usage is government usage. It's government usage being used in particular to track, tax, and attack us as individuals, so that these scumbags in the political class, these no-working, no-brain, thieving scumbags, can get paid. That's what it's about, from what I can see. If there's any greater push and danger that exists with data centers and AI, it's because of government and political use, not because of it's what I've said all along about AI in general, that it's not the AI you have to worry about, it's the guy behind the AI that's programming the AI, the guy that's using the AI, the political person that's forcing you to use the AI, that's forcing it through your political system. It's managing your Social Security, or it's this or that or the other thing. They're the big push. Go figure. Think about that. Follow that particular path for a while. We got to go. I hate to do it, but I think we covered it all. I think it's fairly obvious. You go back and listen to it again if you missed any of the salient points of it. But I think it's a lot of fear and a lot of hype, and I thank you for listening in. And do me a favor, if you found the episode interesting or entertaining or informative, share it with just one person. It's the biggest thing you can do for me. Until next time, take care, and we'll see you on the next episode of Toward Anarchy.
There's a reason why you separate military and the police. One fights the enemy, the state. The other serves and protects the people. When the military becomes both, then the enemies of the state tend to become the people.
You're listening to Toward Anarchy.